Happy Tag Tuesday.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
We are two average girls. Good to see you.
Glad you're here with us. For anybody who might be new, or maybe listeners who are with us every week, we appreciate all of you.
And everyone.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And if you haven't done it yet, get on that purple button and please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps our algorithm.
Our algorithm, for sure. And give us a little, just a little review, which is fun. Just
It'll
like
take 15 seconds.
Hey, Anne and Denise are fun. That's all you have to say.
We're great. We're helping you on your walk. We're going with you on your long drives. We're the friends you never thought you needed, but always want to have.
Yeah, that's right.
Something like that.
Yeah, my apologies for all the misstatements that we make. I have some good news for you, Denise, and I don't know if you're going to be as excited about this as I am.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Did you, whilst it was going on, I know your son Mitchell got into Mindhunter on Netflix. Did you watch Mindhunter?
I did not.
I
have not.
Oh.
Is that the one that we watched together in Las Vegas a while back?
We might have watched a episode of it.
Yes.
There were two seasons, and then it sort of went dark. They just announced there's a third season.
Oh my gosh. I'll have to go back because when we started watching that, it was a lot.
It's a lot. Start from the beginning.
Right.
For those of you who haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. There's two seasons. There's 8 or 9 episodes within each season. The actors are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by David Fincher, who is the director of such classics as Zodiac, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Seven with Brad Pitt. Come on.
You know it's going to be good.
Seven is so good. And this reflects sort of some of that stuff. They're not afraid to get gory. But it's also based on actual events from the FBI Behavioral Science Unit, where those guys start figuring out if we can figure out the personalities of the current serial killers that are behind bars that we've captured. Your Ed Kempers and, Bundy, of course, is not a thing because he was dead. But at that point, the people that they start interviewing people behind bars so they can find out what happens in the mind of a serial killer, that will help them predict. So now when a crime happens and they bring in the FBI, the first thing the FBI does is go, okay, this is a male.
They do a profile.
20 and 30.
Yes.
He lives within X amount of miles from here. He's got mommy issues. He lives with a wife.
Yes.
He does manual labor. Like, they can tell all of these things. And that's what the Mindhunter series is about, is those guys figuring, and a woman. There's a woman involved too who comes to Quantico, and she's also a huge part of it. She's in psychology. It's one of the best series I've ever seen, and they canceled it. They just didn't do another. They didn't do a third, and it was. I've seen 3 or 4 announcements in different places saying Mindhunter's coming back. They've re-signed.
It is literally. It's based on a true story of how it got started.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is one of those things where, when you're looking at human nature, though, we're not that complex.
Well, and I think that's what the behavioral science unit has pointed out. They're like, listen, we can get this pretty close because
there's
not that many options within humans.
You know, Jacqueline was going, and I think she'd be okay with me sharing this, but Jacqueline was going through a divorce when she went through her first divorce, and the guy she was married to was a big jerk. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice thing to say about him. That's probably the nicest thing I've ever said about him.
I love it. Thank you.
Usually it involves cuss words and information that you won't want to hear, but he's jackass. Anyway, as she was going through that, we had John Cunningham, who is our executive coach / resident psychotherapist,
sure,
work with her.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he did was he could tell by the way she was treated by this human being. I say that word loosely, by this, sure, gentleman, by this guy, that his behavior was extremely predictable, and that their behavior together was in a vicious cycle.
Oh.
And when we talked to him and he talked to her, he was able to map out exactly what would happen For example, he'd blow up. They'd get into this altercation. The altercation would end like this. He would leave 5 days before 5 days comes back. He'll be back doing this. I mean, it was like to the T.
Mm.
And it made me realize that, again, human nature is pretty predictable.
It is, yeah.
And what he was able to do with Jacqueline was, when he comes and does this, you don't do this, but you do this.
Mm-hmm.
That way you have the ability to outsmart him, to stop the cycle.
So exhausting.
It's exhausting, but it was also empowering.
Sure, it worked.
It worked.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about, this Mindhunter. Mm-hmm. This is empowering for law enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah.
This gives them an upper hand because, like we've talked before, they don't catch the smart ones.
Yeah, there's no smart criminals.
There's no smart criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes they are smarter than the police, though.
Yeah, it's cunning and wit, but yeah, it's more about hubris and thinking you can get away with it than actual intelligence. So anyway.
So what we're talking about today, this is a story that came out last September, and Ann and I had immediately, when it came out, we thought about talking about it, but we were apprehensive. And the reason being is, well, I'll introduce it. It's the Ruby Frankie child abuse incident.
That's a good way of saying it.
I mean, it's hard. It's very complex. There's a lot of moving parts to it. But you and I had some apprehension about delving into this.
And the more I researched it this last week, the more apprehensive I got, because it involves children. And no one wants to do that. I mean, that's just a real bummer. But it also involves very deep-seated mental illness that from the outside makes you go, oh, no. You can track the decline in behavior, and no one did anything until it was kind of too late.
So. The only person that did something that changed the whole dynamics of this case and this issue was the young boy.
Yeah.
He is the hero
of the story.
He is really the hero of the story. This also involves religion. Mm. And we had just gotten done with the Lori Daybell case. And as we're speaking now and recording this, Chad Daybell's court hearings are going on. Mm-hmm. And I've been getting a glimpse of it a little bit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's not only crazy, it's frustrating because the defense team is good.
Of course.
He's not always. I didn't think her defense team was good. I didn't think they put up much of a defense. They are throwing her right under the bus.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that Lori is going to the grave for him? He seems to be wavering quite a bit.
He's using her and her brother and the whole thing. And you're just like, you can't imagine that there's jurors that didn't hear anything about this case.
Oh, no.
Or that don't know. But supposedly they've got 12 jurors that are going to go to the mat, and they're going to be as impartial as possible. Yeah. I mean, I could never be on that case. There's no way. I'm too invested in what was going on to begin with. I've already made up my mind.
They'd be like, Denise Cooper, were you in the Kauai County Courthouse at any time when Chad Daybell walked in to be
He might recognize us.
Chad, what's up, buddy?
We were literally stalking him and in his face with our cameras.
You would not qualify as a juror. But here's the thing. They cannot. There's certain things that the qualities that the jurors have to meet. One of them doesn't have to be, I don't know anything about the case, okay? Because that's just not possible. They got 12 jurors in OJ. There's certain criteria that they have to meet. And so whatever that criteria was, they met it. They can only dismiss so many jurors. They didn't get their change of venue to the extent that they wanted.
I was really surprised.
You know, they do things different in Idaho. They're like, you're going to kill your kids? Let's talk about that right here.
You're going to kill them and bury them? Let's make sure your peers.
That's the thing. They literally are his peers.
His kids are still sticking to it with him.
They have no choice.
Out of 5 kids, they have 4 that are going to supposedly testify on his behalf.
Think about it. They lost their mom. Mom's gone, and mom was murdered, and now we have someone to blame, and it's not dad.
Yeah, no,
dad's crazy girlfriend / wife did it.
Sure, he was mesmerized. He was under her spell.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think that's a far fetch.
Oh, I also think it was the other way around.
I think it was both.
She was under her spell, but she was under his spell. Have you seen this guy?
I don't understand.
Give me a break. Oh, sorry.
I agree. But it kind of goes with what we're going to talk about today, too. Mm-hmm. Because there's two people at the right place, at the right time, in the right frame of mind that can talk each other into bad things.
Is that what this podcast is?
I think it is.
Did we talk each other into a bad thing?
We could have. You and I have gone to a few things together that we might not have attended.
I gave her the old googly eyes. And she was
Don't mention Magic Mike.
That never happened.
says she. Okay.
We're talking about Ruby Frankie and the events that took place starting, we became aware of it in the fall of last year. So let me just give you a little background about Ruby. She's a Utah mother of six. She once operated her own YouTube channel that was about her life. Mm-hmm. She first made headlines in 2015 for her controversial parenting advice that was shared on the YouTube channel that was called 8 Passengers. It featured her husband, Kevin, and their children.
6 children.
There's 6. Yeah, that's why the 8 passengers. There's 6 and then there's the 2 parents.
Just in case people don't have, you know, their math skills.
Math skills. Yeah. Thank you.
It's like us. We're like, oh, 5, 6. Okay,
6,
got it.
7, 8.
Got it.
The children are Sherry, Chad, Abby, Julie, Russell, and Eve. Sherry and Chad are older than 18.
Now.
The other 4 are minorities. That too. The other 4 are minors. So we're just going to refer to them with initials, even though I already said their names. We don't need to like blast them any further. The channel has now been deleted, but it was really, really popular in its heyday. It had something like 2 million subscribers.
Not 2.5 million subscribers and amassed over 1 billion views.
That's crazy.
That's almost like our podcast.
It's just a little less than our podcast.
I mean, let's talk about vlogging. Vlogging was before reality TV. Right. Like this was like the primer to that. Mm-hmm. And this was an ability for women or men, but people to earn money. Mm-hmm. Now it's saturated. This is one of the first people to do this. Mm-hmm. And she started at 6 a.m. videoing everything that went on in her family's life.
Yeah. Everything that was happening.
And the controversial part of parenting, it wasn't even just some of the controversial parts that we'll talk about are obvious, but there's also the question of, is this cool to do to your family without their consent?
Well, the consent is such an interesting issue, but the kids don't have a choice. They don't have the ability to consent because they're living in the house and this is what mom does.
It is, and I'm sure they didn't think anything of it until, you know, one of the girls starts her period and mom is talking about that to the entire 2.5 million people watching.
It's so bad.
People used to go and, I mean, this momfluencer or mommy vlogger, as they would call her, people would get on and watch every single day. It's kind of like getting on social media and following like a Ballerina Farms. We love her.
Yeah, she's
great. We love to see what she's up to. Mm-hmm. But this is a voyeur situation where you're really in it. She got the taste of the old, you know, stardom a little bit because in her little realm of 2.5 million, she was also a Mormon vlogger or an LDS vlogger.
So let's just say real quick right off the top a little bit about the family. The entire family are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They are Mormons. Her husband, Kevin, has been a BYU professor. He's a professor of civil engineering over there at the university. He is no longer.
He isn't.
No, he's not. I don't know what he's doing, if anything. He's not old enough to have officially retired. I don't know what happened along the way. It doesn't say very clearly. And of course, Ruby and Kevin, I shouldn't say of course, but not surprising to me or Denise, they are divorced. Just a little background about the two of them. These are people that actually had real lives. I mean, to be a professor at a major university like that, that's not an easy task.
He's a smart guy.
Very smart. And they had 6 kids together, and they were good, upstanding members of their church. They were contributing to the church on the regular, like most Mormons do. And it all looked okay from the outside until it didn't.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that she was criticized for was viewers were concerned about her mother, the mother's disciplinary methods, which included withholding food from her kids, saying, you know what, it's going to happen to you. You're not going to be able to eat dinner tonight. Have you ever done that to Cameron?
The little girl, just to jump ahead, one of the things that she talks about, and we will include this, because you can see the... You can actually see it online. You can see the blog. It has not been completely taken down. Most of it has been taken down, but there's these little pieces that appear because people recorded it or whatever, and they post it. So we're going to include her post of her daughter who had forgotten her lunch one day. The daughter's six.
I know.
She's in first grade, and she forgot her lunch. This is what the mother, this is what Ruby Frankie had to say on her blog.
I just got a text message from Eve's teacher, and she said that Eve did not pack a lunch today, and can I bring a lunch over to the school? This happens quite often when you're having raising children, because I know that her teacher is uncomfortable with her being hungry and not having a lunch, and it would ease her discomfort if I came to the school with a lunch. But I responded and just said, Eve is responsible for making her lunches in the morning, and she actually told me she did pack a lunch. So the natural outcome is she's just going to need to be hungry. And hopefully nobody gives her food and nobody steps in and gives her a lunch.
So you asked me, had I ever done that with Cameron? One of the basics, and it's like shelter and food. You cannot... It's mind blowing. The whole situation around food in this house is really upsetting. Listen, Cameron never forgot his lunch. I can say that in all honesty. He never left the house without his lunch.
My kids did.
As the mother, was like, uh-oh, we're running late today. I didn't pack you a lunch, and I would end up running up to the school and giving him lunch. Well, fast forward to he's in high school. I get a phone call from his friend's mother, who is panicked. It's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, whatever. And she's like, so-and-so forgot his lunch. And it's, I don't know what to do. He doesn't have any money on him. And my husband's out of town. I can't leave work. And it became, this is how important the food was. It became an all hands on deck situation where I was like, I got you. Run over to the sandwich place. He gets a 12-inch long.
He's so happy that his mom forgot.
He forgot. The child forgot, which is what happened here.
And he's in high school.
He's in high school. I met him in the office. The office was apprised of what was going on because the office was like, we'll just give him, he can go through the lunch line. It's not a big deal. I'm like, absolutely not. He's not having a crappy public school lunch. Go over to the sandwich shop. We had two bags of chips. We had a water. We had a soda. We had all the stuff that he was so happy because that's how important food is. To a high school student, to any student, you can't go hungry.
Well,
it's terrible.
If you go hungry, it shouldn't be because you're being punished. Mm-mm. That's like...
You're not going to punish with food.
I never did.
You can't punish with food.
I didn't ever think that was a healthy way to go on top of it because to me, eating healthy and eating normal food and even eating food that's not good for you on... sometimes is also good. When you deprive kids of anything, it just becomes a mental issue after that. She also, one of the things that she did that I thought was heartbreaking was she is threatening to behead one of the stuffed toys. She's got like this Beanie Baby in her hands. And she's like, I'm telling you, and she's talking to the little girl, I will take this doll, this toy, and I will cut its head off. And the daughter's, you can see her. She's all in the background and they've got her fuzzed out. But she's like, she grabs her mouth like, not my baby.
Terrifying.
And you're like, this was for the camera. All of this was for the camera, which was disgusting to me.
Here's some other interesting things. Ruby's siblings. I know she has three sisters. I don't know if they were brothers, but Ruby, the mother, Ruby Frankie, she had siblings who also got their own YouTube channels as well. Oh. They didn't last as long, nor were they as popular as Ruby's, but I thought that was interesting that they kind of like got on the train as well. Like I said, they had nowhere near the exposure that this woman had. So just a little more overview. 2 years after they started, no, that's not right. As things do, the viewership of her vlog sort of ebbed and flowed. And as her tactics, like you're saying, got more controversial, people sort of started getting away from her vlog and watching her on YouTube. So, of course, that means that the commercial money starts going away as well, because she was making money from this.
They bought a different house because of how much money they were making. This was bringing in a lot of money. This mm-hmm. wasn't just a little hobby. This wasn't like, oh, some extra money for the kids, you know, for them to go to camp in the summer. This was next level money. This was life-changing money. I can tell you this. The controversial parenting style became so worrisome to people that there was a petition that was put together by change.org, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it got a bunch of people to send it to Child Protective Services mm-hmm. and ask them to investigate. Because one of the things that was revealed, Ruby's oldest son sitting there saying, yeah, I haven't had a bed to sleep in 7 months.
This is Chad. He's 19 now.
She took away the bed from him. Mm-hmm. And he was sleeping on a beanbag. That was after she had sent him to wilderness camp because mm-hmm. of his bad behavior. But when he was explaining, yeah, well, I haven't had a bed to sleep on in 7 months, she started laughing like, I don't think our viewers know that. Mm-hmm. We've never told them. Oh, that was like the catalyst for people to go, okay, wait, what is going on? And I think what ended up happening is because of the viewership, because people were like, I'm not going to pay for this, because that's what was going on. You're paying for a subscription to this. Yeah. This wasn't just on YouTube and you could just show up.
Right.
It's a subscription-based program.
Yeah, you're paying for it. So what they said was, this was after he got back from that Outward Bound camp mm-hmm. that he lost.
Yes.
He literally, they said, had his bedroom taken away because he pulled a practical joke mm-hmm. on the little brother. I don't know what that was. And maybe that's not acceptable in the house. There's things that make you go, I don't know what the setup is in the house. Maybe they had said to him, part of your responsibility now that you're back from your camp is to treat your siblings better.
Maybe.
And maybe he pulled some horrible prank on the kid that was like unacceptable. But for 7 months, they dismantled his room.
That doesn't seem like the punishment fits the crime.
This is the thing. So they also defended themselves by saying, we gave him a choice of beds. He could have a pullout, a blow up, or a beanbag. And he chose the beanbag. So they're putting it on Chad. They're putting it on the son. Like, no, this was his choice. But they had to come to their own defense because people were freaking out over this yeah. situation.
Yeah.
And it was all still playing out on the YouTube channels.
Something else that they did, which I think this is like a sacred area you just don't go to, is that they threatened that their two of their kids, they would not have Santa Claus visiting them at Christmas time. And this was a quote, because they were so numb to response to the punishments that they were receiving.
The worst part of that is there were still six children living in the house. Santa came for the older four.
I know.
The youngest two didn't get Santa because they were both under 10, however old they were both under 10 years old. They didn't get visited by Santa because they needed to be taught truth and love, boundaries and repentance. And by not getting gifts from Santa, the parents were inviting them unto repentance, which is... Okay.
What do you think about that, well, that phrase?
I have a real problem with it because it's mixing... You're bringing in a religious aspect, which the kids probably need that. There's a support system that comes along with the church.
Absolutely.
And then when the punishment at home is involving or revolving around church, I'm not a psychologist, but that you're crossing other lines now that are getting very, very confusing. So now Santa and repentance are in the same boat? That doesn't seem right.
And this is why you and I were saying this. Lori Daybell, this chick, all these people there's something screwy in their mind that has happened on a religious aspect. I want everyone to know out there, you and I are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. A lot of what you hear and read about their outlook on life, parenting, punishment, the way to even think about God and heaven and all of these things, they are outliers. This is no way a reflection on what this religion is about in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, it's not accurate. And that's the problem when you have someone like this that creates these headlines. The first headline that happens is Mormon mom. So yeah. All of a sudden, we're all thrown under the bus with these people. It's like, I'm not even on that bus.
I never got on the bus.
I didn't get on the bus. I'm not interested in being on the bus with her. I don't like it. Between 2020, broad overview. Between 2020 and 2022, that's when things started to go south for the vlog. That's when, as Denise said, viewers called DCSF. They had that petition. They started to get investigated. The viewership goes down to a point where they just kind of shuttered the whole thing. By 2022, there were no more posts. I don't think they had shut off the channel. There just weren't any new posts. It starts to trail off quite a bit. She decided to open her own clothing company called Ruby Doo. It didn't do anything. It didn't go well at all. So at this point, she gets hooked up with a woman. Now let's introduce Jody Hildebrandt. Jody Hildebrandt first gets introduced to the family as Chad, the son's life coach, psychologist, sort of person that's going to therapist. It's going to
She's a licensed therapist.
She's a licensed therapist. That comes into question as well. She's had her license suspended. This woman was a therapist that was meeting with people or working with people who were LDS, and she told members of the LDS leadership, hey, guess what? Bob Smith, who is in your congregation, is XYZ. She completely broke the bound of the client-doctor privilege. She just punched right through it. She had her therapy license suspended as a therapist for 3 years because she did that. It completely blew everything up. You're not allowed to do that. This is not a, oh, I know your secrets and now I'm going to go tell the church.
Interesting thing about all of this is that you said she got her license suspended. When you talked to people who knew her and were shocked about that this even happened, they said they couldn't believe she didn't get her license taken away.
That's the thing. It's like, why are you suspending it? Make sure she can't ever practice therapy again.
She obviously has no boundaries.
Right.
And if you would have delved in a little bit about what she's doing and how she's counseling, you would have seen immediately, this is not normal. She overstepped it. And for her to have her license, if she still didn't have her license, if the court system and everybody would have done their job, this probably would have never happened.
I don't know, because it was almost a cult, the way this woman was sort of running her life and the people around her. Ruby Frankie got trained to be a mental fitness trainer. So these two get together and start doing their thing. They appear together on vlogs. They have their own YouTube channel. The Connection, is that what it's called? Connection?
It's spelled C-O-N-N-E-X with a big Yeah, big X big in X. The middle, mm-hmm. I-O-N-S, a company run by Jody and different counselors.
She claims to be an expert in marital issues as well as addictions, but she specializes in pornography addiction. She's got a real thing with pornography, which makes you go, what's your problem with pornography? There's many different gray areas and versions. Sometimes it's called, I'm a 16-year-old boy and I want to look at stuff. And some of it is, I can't get out from in front of my computer because I can't stop looking. There's a big difference. And there's a lot of gray area in between there. According to her, there is no gray area.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
That was the problem with everything that we're going to be talking about. There is no gray area for Jody either.
No, there's not. You can watch her decline. The more involved Jody is with Ruby, the decline of Ruby is quite something. And you realize in the end, I'll just, spoiler alert, this is Jody.
Yes.
Driving this train. She is the one who has gotten in her ear and has kind of brought the whole thing to a head.
What's interesting about Connections and what it stood for was it wasn't just... I think Jody played it really well. It seemed as if she was able to get different people that she had been working with, or that she's working with Jody and Jody knows so-and-so, and then those people know somebody else, and this woman is awesome, and she's going to train us on how to be a mental fitness counselor. It's going to empower us. We are going to be good. Not only that, it's going to encompass our religious beliefs on top of it.
How can you go wrong?
You're doing it in the name of religion, which to me is a big, big red flag.
Huge.
Anybody, you got to be careful with that. Mm-hmm. But here we are, these people, and it was like they sold it to this, and it became a social gathering for people. Mm-hmm. They would have big meetings. And they would have all of these women, mostly women. Mm. There was a man every so often, but he would be in there for role play.
Oh.
Like he would be in there.
I didn't realize that's why he was there.
He was there to be the bad guy and they would be able to talk. I got a sense early on, and I think it's been said by many, that Jody seems like a man-hater.
Oh, you can get that vibe from her and you don't have to stretch far. It's she hates men.
Well, when I first heard about this whole thing and I started delving into it, I got the sense that there was some sort of romantic relationship between Jody and Ruby.
Has that ever been proven?
No.
Okay.
And I don't think that there was.
Yeah.
But I think that if it was left to Jody, there might have been. I'm just saying. It just seemed odd, the amount of intimate time and the way she almost inserted herself in their lives so intimately. Mm-hmm. It's so inappropriate that it was like something you would only do if you're obsessed with that other person. Jody came to live at their home.
Yes. Yes.
And she came to live at their home for a lot of different reasons that are very, very weird and extremely concerning.
Especially once you see her home, Jody's home. Did you see this place?
Yes.
She's got a beautiful house that is like very modern. It's set out like in the desert or whatever. It's supposedly, it's been appraised at $5 million because she's got to sell that sucker in order to cover her own legal fees. So the fact that she moved in with Kevin and Ruby Frankie tells me that she had an ulterior motive. It wasn't because... Well, I'm in between scenarios right here. I can't, you know, I don't want to live in an apartment or I'm selling. No. She came to live with them in order to, what, help them, in order to observe the family. At this point, their oldest daughter, she's out of there. She's gone. Chad, the oldest son, is still there living in the house. But the oldest daughter, Sherry, said, I cannot with you people. And she got the heck out of there. There's not a lot of information of where she went or what she did, but she was like, I won't be party to this.
Well, not only that, but when you hear about what happened after they had been after all of this takes place and the kids are found and rescued, basically, Sherry goes on social media and she puts on her Instagram page or her Instagram story and it says, finally. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little summary of the kids are okay. They're in the hospital. Mm-hmm. She had made two different phone calls to the police to do welfare checks on the kids that were still there, the four kids, because neighbors had been telling her that we haven't seen the kids. We haven't seen your mom. We know that they're there by themselves. There's nobody in the home. Because remember, Kevin moves out. Mm-hmm. Ruby and Jody are doing their thing. Jody's at their house. Ruby has the kids at Jody's house at some times. The two middle teenage girls are on their own.
The four youngest kids were, it was known to the oldest daughter that the four youngest kids were home alone. She knew that her mother was in St. George. The car was gone. Mm-hmm. Neighbors called that oldest daughter and said, there's something happening over the house. So the daughter calls the police to do a welfare check. The police go over there, do a welfare check. They can see four children in the house. No one comes to the door. And I don't understand it. They can't bust the door down. They don't go in, but it's the welfare check was everybody's fine kind of thing. They're presuming they have enough food to hold them over. The two youngest were homeschooled. The two middle children went to public school. So those two little kids weren't getting any interaction with good, decent people at the school who could look at them and go, something's not right. They were allegedly being homeschooled, which is in giant air quotes, because mom's gone. Mom's out for weeks at a time. They're not being schooled in anything.
No.
So we've already established that they were arrested. Let me just tell a little bit. This happened in August. Both Frankie and Hildebrandt were arrested after Frankie's 12-year-old son escaped from Hildebrandt's house and ran over to a neighbor who called 911. Mm-hmm. Most of us have seen the video just on regular news. A lot of us have seen and heard the 911 call. We're going to post that 911 call from the neighbor and let you guys listen to it, and then we'll get back.
Tell me exactly what's happened.
I just had a 12-year-old boy show up here at my front door asking for help. And he's said he just came from a neighbor's house, and we know there's been problems at this neighbor's house. He's emaciated, he's got tape around his legs, he's hungry, and he's thirsty.
Okay. Is your door locked?
No, I'm sitting outside with him on the front patio.
Okay, cool.
And he asked us to call the police. So he's very afraid.
Are the neighbors out of their home, or is anybody looking for him that you can see?
No. Our homes are far enough away. I'm not sure. How did you get out of the house?
Porch.
He says he just left through the porch at the neighbor's house. Her name is Jody Hildebrand, and she lives two doors up the street.
Out here in
Cayenne, the houses are far apart, so he walked just under the block to get to our house. He rang my doorbell and asked me to call the police.
Does he seem to be under the influence of drugs or alcohol?
I don't think so, but he's very thirsty and...
Does he need an ambulance?
I don't think he needs an ambulance. I'll let the cops decide that, but his ankles are taped up and he won't tell us why.
Okay.
But he has duct tape around each ankle. Yeah, there's sores around them. I think the good chance he's been...
He
has them around his ankles. I mean, his wrists as well. Okay, this boy has been...
So according to that neighbor, the boy was malnourished, had visible injuries, duct tape on his limbs. The boy later told investigators that Hildebrand would put cayenne pepper and honey on the wounds from where the ropes were.
Yes.
That... were caused from being tied with the rope. That's one of the things that was in the arrest warrant. In a press release, public safety explained that based on the evidence, officers proceeded to a nearby residence only to discover another juvenile in a comparable condition. What they did is they went next door to Jody's house and they found the littlest girl, the little six-year-old that didn't have, you know, her lunch. That little girl.
Who's now 10. She was 10
at the time of this. She was in the same kind of condition as her brother. The two of Frankie's children were taken to the hospital, those two, for medical treatment, according to the court documents. Those kids, along with Frankie's other children, were placed in the custody of the Department of Children and Family Services. So DFS, fun. Following her arrest, Frankie's family, including the oldest daughter, made several statements about the situation, and all of them, basically, to summarize, agreed that they were glad that justice is finally being served. Now, that includes her sisters, her three sisters, Ruby Frankie's three sisters, as well as the oldest daughter. They all said, "We have been trying, and no one has been listening." So, what a relief for that family and for those poor little kids, the littlest ones that were found.
So Jody is a therapist. She's got some mental health issues, and we know this. There is a second interview that Kevin does with the police. It's very lengthy. I was trying to get my hands on the video of it because I had heard it, but what I got something better was it's a redacted version, but it is pretty accurate, and it goes with some of the best parts on Reddit, of course, because sure. if it has to be true if it's on Reddit. But someone uploaded this, so I appreciate this person, ICC1168.
Okay.
She really does a full summary of Kevin's second police interview. I'm going to actually read a few of the things that he talks about. The first thing is, it says, he tells the police a little bit about, he's in there for the second interview because he wants to give the police as much information as can help, that can help them. And one of the things that he asks, first of all, is if they had found the, writings, her journal diary, he knew that there was information in there that was going to be important. They ask him, "How did you get involved with Jody? Why is she such an integral part of your life? Why
this would is your, Ruby's husband, Kevin.
Ruby's husband, Kevin. Why would your kids be living at their house?" Well, here's the other weird thing about Kevin. Somewhere in 2022, they separate at Jody's
behest.
Yes. Mm. She suggests that, you know, if you want your marriage to be stronger, you need to be separated. He's a smart guy. He even says that word for word in this interview. "I'm a smart guy. I am a professor from a major university." He's in engineering.
He is, yeah.
How dumb are you that you would let this woman control the whole narrative? He moves out. And not only does he move out, he's not allowed to have any contact or even have any verbal contact with his kids. He can't call them on the phone. He doesn't see them for a year.
Let's be clear. That was not court ordered. That was Jody telling Ruby, this is how you need to run your life with your kids and your estranged husband.
But he's only been estranged from the second he left. That was the parameters. He can't see you and he can't see them.
Right.
Who in their right, what father in their right mind says, okay?
Well, this is a dad that let all of this stuff happen. It's one tiny bite at a time.
It is so, I blame him. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. He should be the advocate for these children. Mm-hmm. He was absent. A whole year goes by. When he goes in for his first police interview and he's trying to pick up his kids at the police station, he has no idea what has gone on. Mm-hmm. When they start describing it to him, you can see on his face, he's pretty shocked. Mm-hmm. But he even says at that time, I don't want to say anything that might put my wife, who I still love very much, mm-hmm. in jeopardy. He starts to talk about how they got involved with it. And he says, I don't exactly know what happened. The Hannahs were trying to convince Jody to merge her cult with this new cult.
Wait.
They were interested in.
He used the word cult?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes, he did.
Who were the Hannahs?
In March of 2021, after Connections Conference in St. George, all the inner circle of Connections people, mental fitness coaches, I say that in air quotes, went out to dinner and Jody opened up to the women in a private conversation about how she was being tormented and haunted by shadow figures every night. Yeah. Kevin says that was spooky. He doesn't know what happened, but the Hannahs do. The Hannahs are friends of Jody.
Okay.
And at some point around then, the Hannahs drove to get Jody and let her move into their house for 6 weeks because they felt bad for her. She seemed shadow figures. Yeah. Let's say someone tells you, I'm seeing shadow figures. I'm being haunted every night. The last thing I'm going to do is invite her to my home.
That's the thing is, I think these people are the psychosis, whatever it is, the psychopathy is such that they're able to sell you that. I'm seeing shadow figures. But that comes along with, but I'm okay. I just really shouldn't be alone. I'm sorry, Denise. You come to me and you're seeing shadow figures. We're going to go for a little ride and go get some yogurt. And what we're actually going to do is go to a mental health facility. And you're welcome.
I mean, that's what needs to happen here. But instead, these people, again, religion is mixed with this whole idea of well-being.
Psychiatry.
Yeah, we're going to mix it. I'm a good person.
Sure.
I'm being Christ-like. Yeah. I'm going to do the right thing by this person. I can't leave her alone, right? Mm-hmm. I can't leave her alone. This is where Kevin first refers to Connections as a cult. He says, I don't know exactly what happened, but the Hannahs were trying to convince Jody to merge her cult with a new cult that they were interested in. What? Detectives asked if they used the word cult, and Kevin says, of course not. Nobody in a cult thinks they're in a cult.
This is the best thing he's ever said.
I know. Finally, I mean, this is a while after. I mean, I think he probably started seeing what was going on and he realized, I gotta separate myself from all of this. Kevin says, according to Jody, she was held against her will for 6 weeks while she was with the Hannahs. According to the Hannahs, Jody was stabbing herself with forks the whole time and trying to seduce the Hannah husband. Mm. This is what Kevin says. He doesn't know who is telling the truth. Mm. He doesn't know who's telling the truth. So all of a sudden now Jody is telling this to Ruby. You got to get me out of here. They're holding me against my will.
Jody is like the queen of the power move. She's getting in on the inside and
using those.
These are people who are searching for something. They don't have their own thing. And so they're searching and they're.
She also knows all of their problems
weaknesses. That's why it's happening. And now she's hitting on. See, because her sexuality has come into question just by the two of us, just from what we've seen, which isn't that much. So anyone who knows her probably thinks, she might not like men, period, in any way.
But now she's seducing the Hannah husband?
That's a power move. She's not seducing him because she wants him. She's seducing him because she's trying to show that she's the alpha in the house. She's in the house.
Yeah, it's weird.
Unbelievable. So
I mean, you come to your house because you're going to help me and then I'm going and seducing your husband?
Listen, I don't mean to go completely off track here, but we had a friend who did the same thing.
What?
She was a total psychopath and she was married to one of Warren's best friends. And no matter what man you brought around, she'd power move it. She
really?
Would, in front of the wife, every dude, she would.
She do it to you?
100 times.
You don't even give her the time of day.
Well, you know my husband. He don't play.
He's like,
homie, don't play.
No, he wouldn't give her the time of day.
Not even. And she like pulled out all the stops. And I mean, when I say pull out all the stops, I mean, she
pulled out her boobies.
She absolutely did.
No way.
It was a whole nother level. So when you tell me about this woman, it's like, I don't want the guy. I want to power move the wife.
That's really insightful. I really appreciate that. Thank you. That's really, really good. I can't believe that you had to deal with that.
Yeah.
After unraveling, and that's in quotes, Jody calls Ruby for help. Kevin says Ruby was really jealous of the Hannahs and their connection to Jody.
Oh.
He says Ruby has struggled with jealousy like that since childhood.
Uh-oh.
Yes. You see, now you know her insecurities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kevin and Ruby drove to Jody's house for the first time. And Kevin was blown away because he said, how does a therapist live this rich? Ruby was convinced that they needed to intervene and help her.
Okay.
Kevin didn't want to. Mm-mm. He wanted Jody to go to her own church bishop and church support network. Ruby tells Kevin, no, her reputation will be hurt if this gets out.
Whose? Jody's or Ruby's?
Jody's.
So she's protecting Jody.
She's telling her she can't go and admit what was going on. She can't say she's been hurting herself. She can't say that she's seen shadow figures because her reputation would be built. But also, she's now attached her wagon to Jody's, right?
Right.
That means her cash cow is gone too, because she's starting to make money doing this. Mm-hmm. If this gets out, she's protecting herself,
right,
along with Ruby, right?
Right.
The Frankies have to help. Between May and August of 2021, the Frankies go to Jody's house often to try to help. At this point, the church bishop is coming to Jody's house every night and says he can't handle it anymore.
The bishop said he can't handle it anymore? Now, that's a big deal. Let's just pause for a moment, because the bishop's job is to handle it, right?
This is when Ruby tells Kevin that they must let Jody move in with them.
Oh, that's when it happens.
He says, hell no. Ruby tells Kevin he's insensitive and forces him to accept Jody moving in. Kevin says the moment she arrives, weird shit starts happening. That's in quotes.
The moment Jody arrives.
In her home.
No. Okay.
Footsteps and walls.
What?
Yes. Okay. Footsteps and walls. Lights turning on and off with no apparent reason for it. What? No one's doing it.
Okay.
Kevin says he jokingly starts referring to himself as an exorcist.
Okay.
But it's also not a joke, because Jody would go into these trances.
Uh-oh. Ugh. There's a trance.
Jody's visions would be for so long and so crazy that they would constantly be up and down all night.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So She's having these issues.
She's having visions.
Like these exorcists. I'm picturing something. She's in a room.
Can I ask, do we think that there was a supernatural element to this, or was Jody perpetrating this somehow? Like, there was knocking on the wall and Jody wasn't in the room when the knocking happened.
I don't know. Listen, he's a smart man. He says this. Okay, so let's go on. Jody's visions continue. And Ruby says, I'm going to have to sleep in her bed with her from now on.
Ruby says that about Jody. Good times.
Around September, Jody, Ruby, and Pam would lock themselves into rooms and have these basically trips where they would talk about all of these visions that they were having. So that was in September. October of 2021, Kevin starts to really get over all of it. One night, it takes you that long? One night, he's supposed to be keeping Chad and his friends away from the ladies as they have their crazy woo-woo trips, but he takes the dog on a walk and somehow Chad's friends get inside. So Chad is the son.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be outside, but all that's going on in the house, they're not allowing Chad in and his friends. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jody flips out and Ruby asks Kevin for an in-home separation.
In-home? What does that mean?
He can stay there.
Okay.
But they will not be having any kind of intimacy, and they will not be interacting with one another.
It kind of sounds like that's sort of what's happening as it is anyway. She's sleeping with Jody. She's in Jody's bed, so to speak.
She's in Jody's bed.
Go on.
Kevin says the in-home separation meant that he could live in the home, but Ruby had to give him permission for everything.
Oh, fun.
He couldn't go where Jody was in his own home. He begins to hang on Ruby's every word and is dependent on her for his own sanity and basic permissions.
Is he telling that?
That's what he's saying. This is his words.
Okay.
This is in the police report.
Yeah, go on.
Eventually, around the holidays of 2021, Ruby ends the separation and Jody moves back to her Ivan's home.
Bye.
Okay. Mm. At this point, Kevin tells Ruby she's going nuts. Ruby, Pam, Jody are becoming obsessed with these visions and teaching them to others through God.
No.
So he tells Ruby that her and Pam and Jody are obsessed with these teachings and doing it with others. Ruby wants to give Jody 8 passengers.
What does that mean?
Means she wants to give her the legal right to own it.
Oh, that's a twist that
I didn't. And become her employee.
And become, Ruby wants to be Jody's employee. Jody is working it, I mean, from every direction.
Kevin says, like, no way. And their YouTube manager is telling Ruby, absolutely not.
No.
Mm-mm. This woman is scamming you.
Yeah. Ooh, the manager said that.
Yes.
Good.
Because obviously her husband can't.
So they immediately fired him.
Ruby fires the manager.
No! No, sorry.
And tells Kevin they will separate again if he denies her handing over the business to Jody.
But Kevin is finally trying to grow a pair. It's not working, but he's trying.
Yeah.
Okay.
In July of 2022, Jody, Pam, and Ruby go on a trip to Arizona. He reads in Ruby's journal that they went to Mexico to buy prescription drugs.
Sure.
As Ruby arrives back home, Ruby asks Kevin for a separation and for him to move out.
Okay.
So she goes with these women, and now they've worked it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now Kevin is part of a men's group and Jody is torturing him. This is what he says. Now, I don't understand what that means. The other men are in the same boat. If they get Jody's approval, their life is easier.
Okay, so this is those two groups that Jody set up, the men's group and the women's group, and that's where she originally crossed the line, telling the women what the men had been saying. Yeah. So Kevin is still a part of this men's group at this point.
Yes. If that means piling on another man, they will do it. Mm-hmm. Kevin's on Jody's bad list. He is trying everything to get his family back, but Jody is telling them he is hiding things.
Sure.
He's not being truthful.
Right.
I know what's in him.
Mm-hmm.
She's telling him no. He's starting to question his own sanity at this point.
Yeah. They're gaslighting him in the biggest way.
Uh-huh. For a year, Jody continues to isolate Kevin. It gets to the point where there's a list of approved men he is allowed to call.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't imagine.
Can you imagine?
He's sitting in this police station. He is telling these other men.
Cops. Alphas. The alphas of the world. And they're looking at him going, uh-huh.
People he's allowed to call. And when he calls them, they say they don't want to talk to him because Jody says he's a manipulative person.
Okay.
She doesn't allow him to go to his church leaders or his family because he was seeking, this is in quotes, enablement.
Okay. Like he want, by doing that, they would tell him that what he's doing is right. And Jody knows it's wrong.
Yeah. July of 2023, Jody calls Kevin out of the blue and tells him he's not changing. Jody tells him he's not changing.
Okay. What does that mean, he's not changing?
She says she's asking God what to do, and God is telling Jody that Kevin needs complete isolation and solitude.
Okay.
He is no longer allowed in the men's group or to talk to anyone. He asks who he is now allowed to talk to, and she says God only. This was his last interaction or contact with Jody.
Good.
Which is good.
That's good.
According to the same time, around that same time, Ruby starts communicating with Kevin again. She wants to meet in the parking lot and have him sign their cars over to her name.
Sure.
Asks him if he trusts her to sign his name on whatever documents she needs. He thinks he has to say yes for a chance to get his family back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She says she's making an investment, and Kevin asks, after the arrest, when he returned to their family home, everything was packed up and the neighbor said she was trying to rent the house out or sell it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. She's going to move in with Jody.
Kevin, I cannot describe to you what torture and hell it was to live in an entire month in complete isolation, believing that I was evil,
dude,
manipulative, lying, and selfish. That I had to abandon my family. In August of 2023, Kevin would wake up, work out, go to work, come home, and do connections workbooks and desperately try to get selfishness out of himself.
So he's still working it.
His plan was that in 6 months, he could reach back out to Jody and ask to get back into the men's group.
This is unbelievable. He's at fault. I'm sorry. He's at fault here. I don't mean to be that person, because he's a victim as well. But No. Can you imagine a scenario where either of our husbands would do even a third of this? This is ridiculous.
I mean, it's I guess there's always somebody that will fall for anything.
Yeah, it's true.
That would be what it was. So this interview also consists of him asking about the journal. And when we pick up next time, mm-hmm. we'll talk about that. I think the journal entries are so interesting and so just such an insightful way to see into the mind of this woman. Mm-hmm. She never thought that there was anything wrong with what was going on.
No, which is a problem. You always have to think that there might be a little bit of a problem and I might be it. That's always in the back of my mind. Like, what part of this argument is me? Probably a lot of it. What part of this discontent is me? Well, it's probably,
none of that.
There was no insight.
The only reflection there was what Jody was telling everybody to do. Mm-hmm. They believed in her that much.
Yeah, that's not good.
So in our next segment, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Jody's niece.
Been going on for a while. I'm glad you brought up the journals. We'll talk about that more next time. I've had some recent journal experience that I will share in our next our next podcast that is also enlightening. I didn't know they could be so dangerous.
Really?
They will get you put into jail.
Really?
Sorry, Ruby. That's part of it. That was part of the defense.
Well, there's absolutely no way that you can, when it's in your own handwriting, mm-hmm. and it's literally describing.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have part two next week. Thank you for joining us on this Tag Tuesday. I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
We're Two Average Girls. We'll see you next time.
Episodes of Two Average Girls are free wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button on the Two Average Girls main page so you never have to go searching for new episodes.
Our editor is Aiden Bloomstein.
Our social media producer is Samantha Stone.
And original music for Two Average Girls is by Jason Fries.